ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 Kitapesaskritam dhyayam
Kitapesaskritam dhyayam
Uttam tena pavishtitaha
Uttam tena pavishtitaha
Yatitad sammatam rajan
Yatitad sammatam rajan
Ovarupam asantyajan
Ovarupam asantyajan
Kita,
kita,
an insect.
An insect.
Pesa kritam.
Pesa kritam.
A wasp.
Dhyayam. Dhyayam.
Meditating on.
Meditating on.
Kudyam.
Kudyam.
In his hive.
In his hive.
Tena.
Tena.
By the wasp.
By the wasp.
Praveshitaha.
Praveshitaha.
Forced to enter.
Forced to enter.
So here, what is being discussed? Kita pesa kritam dhyayan. The kita means an insect. Pesa kritam is a particular type of wasp that captures that insect. And that insect, when he's caught by that wasp, naturally, what is he dhyayan? What is he meditating or thinking only about? If someone captures you and holds on to you very tightly and is about to kill you, naturally, the consciousness becomes fully absorbed in that entity. So that's what's being described. An insect caught by a wasp, and he's meditating upon the wasp. Kudyam.
Kudyam.
In his hive.
In his hive.
Tena.
Tena.
By the wasp.
By the wasp.
Praveshiktaha.
Praveshiktaha.
Praveshiktaha means enter. What verse of the Bhagavad Gita has that word in it? I also can't remember
right now.
Say again?
Bhaktyatvananeshakya aham evam vidurotina.
Gyatum drashtum praveshtena. Praveshtum. Very good. And that means?
By devotion to
from the 11th chapter, yes. Let's see what it means.
Only by devotional service one can enter into the mysteries of my understanding.
Mm-hmm. Very good. So, this wasp captures the insect and forces the insect into his hive. And the insect, so kudyam, means into his hive, forced, tenam, pronoun for the wasp, and praveshitaha, is forced to enter into his hive, and that insect is just meditating upon the wasp, his captor. Yati,
yati,
he goes,
he goes,
tat,
tat,
of the wasp,
of the wasp,
sa'atmanam,
sa'atmanam,
sa'atmatam,
sa'atmatam,
the same state of existence. So he obtains, because of that meditation, he obtains the same state of existence as the wasp. So there is such irony in that. The thing that one is averse to, the very thing that one doesn't want, one becomes that thing. There's even a saying in English, you become what you hate. Because you're always meditating upon it. Purvarupam.
Purvarupam.
The previous body.
Previous body.
Asantyajan.
Asantyajan.
Not giving up.
Not giving up.
We'll read the translation now. Okay. Once a wasp, now I'm going to ask you what you remember, even before I read the purport. I'm going to ask you after I read the verse, so please listen carefully. O King, okay, did you remember that? We can make it a multiple choice question. Was it O King, O Queen, O Peasant, O Messenger? What's the answer? Yes, very good. O King, once a wasp was forced a weaker insect to enter his hive and kept him trapped there. In great fear, the weak insect constantly meditated upon his captor, and without giving up his body, he gradually achieved the same state of existence as the wasp. Thus, one achieves a state of existence according to one's constant concentration. This is so important and so deeply meaningful. In here lies the key to a future good or bad situation for each and every one of us. It depends upon what? What our consciousness is meditating or focused upon. Okay, we'll say it together and then I'll ask the question. O King,
O King,
once a wasp forced a weaker insect,
once a wasp forced a weaker insect
to enter his hive,
to enter his hive,
and kept him, trapped there.
Trapped there.
In great fear, the weak insect constantly meditated upon his captor.
Constantly meditated upon his captor.
And without giving up his body,
and without giving up his body,
he gradually achieved the same state of existence.
He gradually achieved the same state of existence
as the wasp.
As the wasp.
Thus one achieves
a state of existence
according to one's constant concentration. Okay, without looking, what do you remember? Just raise your hand though. Raise your hand if you remember something from the verse. Yeah, raise your hand up.
Wasp forced an insect into its hive, and out of fear, the insect was always meditating on the wasp, and therefore became what he feared, the wasp.
What do you think about that? What do you think about that?
Watch out for wasps.
Yeah, because of the obvious implication of that. Did someone else?
Without giving up the present body, you have to be the insect, just by the meditation, otherwise you achieve the same existence.
He obtained the same state of existence. Thus, one achieves, and then here comes the principle. There was the example, and the last line is the principle. Thus, one achieves a state of existence according to one's constant concentration. Now, who can think of some, would like to make a statement about this? Yes.
Existence is independent of the body, but from consciousness.
Existence depends, literally, rests upon the consciousness, our existence. Yes, anything else? Any other philosophical implications of this, or practical implications?
I feel that...
Yes?
I feel that if you see the observed players, depending on what game they are playing, their body results in their practice accordingly. Like the, if you see this body of a swimmer or basketball player,
Swimmer, yeah.
Or basketball player, they're very typical kind of physique and all that. Body, you know, because of their absorption with that game, they develop that kind of body too.
like to make the fluids stuff cool. We'll read the purport too, of course. But I just wanted to see if there's any what thoughts you have at this point. Because like Prabhupada would make the point that the animals are running on, the dog is running on four legs, looking for food, looking for this, looking for that, and you are running on four wheels. So what is the difference? So it's really the same state of existence is what Prabhupada was pointing out, isn't it? Because the mentality is just the same. Anyone else want to say something philosophical about this? We have exhausted all the philosophical points. Yeah?
I was thinking that there's some other detail of Krishna's is Yama Vismarama, that we have a consciousness that you can.
When you leave your body, this is even still more wonderful, isn't it? Well, still within the body. Has anyone ever seen an example of this? You gave an example of. Athletes. Yeah, you did that example of athletes. And actually, it's, yes.
Sometimes you see other animals think that the energy and the whole vegetation.
Yeah, and therefore,
they look similar.
Has anyone ever seen that? I've seen that. And also, the man and the man and the wife, and the wife and the man. After some time, the man, the lady, and the dog all start looking the same. Yeah.
Bharat Maharaj was about you. Deer. He was thinking about deer. Bharat Maharaj.
Bharat Maharaj was thinking of a deer. But also in training, athletic training. If you want to improve your basketball game or tennis game or swimming, all you have to do is watch the professionals. The ones who are really expert, you don't have to do anything else. You don't even have to go out in the court and practice. You just become like that by absorbing the concentration in that. That's so wonderful. Wonderful in the sense that it fills our consciousness with great wonder about first of all, the way that the material world is working. And it also teaches us how the spiritual world, how to get to the spiritual world. Let me read the purport. The following question may be raised. Since the weaker insect in this story did not physically change his body, this is addressing your question, how can it be said that he achieved the same state of existence as the wasp? Actually, by constant meditation upon a particular object, one's consciousness becomes filled with its qualities. So is that good news or bad news? Depends on what time of the day it is, perhaps. Our consciousness. And just see the responsibility of the government if they understood this principle, because advertising manipulates our consciousness so much. And the mood that the government allows to go on to filter down to the media, to the people. So much affects the present consciousness of the people and also the future consciousness. What a responsibility rests in the hands of the government, what to speak of the individuals. But the government, because of the type of propaganda or media exposure that the poor citizens get exposed to is going to affect, they're going to begin to focus their consciousness on that particular thing, and then that's going to determine the qualities that they have. So if people nowadays are becoming animalistic, it's because their consciousness is absorbed in animalistic things. And on the other hand, it would be so easy, in a sense, to make people godly. Just put, have, if, of course it's a big if, if the media, if all the exposure to people's consciousness was of godly things, how different the people would be in this life and their next life. Therefore, in the Vedic culture, I remember somewhere in one of Prabhupada's books, he explains it, that at night, the people would always hear something Shastric, some Mahabharata stories. Even the ordinary village people. So that their consciousness would focus. And if one looks at the Mahabharata or reads it, one sees that everything that is discussed and described in the Mahabharata isn't the highest of all religious principles. It's efficient in the Bhagavad Gita describes that you should surrender and come to the spiritual platform. But the Mahabharata is filled with heroic people acting with ideal character. So that the people who listen to this and the grandparents, how many of those from most from Indian heritage had their grandmothers or grandfathers read to them or hear Mahabharata from them? One? Only one? Two? Three? Four? Five? Yeah. This is the culture. This is how culture is transferred from one generation to the next. And this is how character is transferred from one generation to the next. By hearing of these heroic personalities, not just watching television and filling the consciousness with the daily news. If you hear the daily news, you're going to get the blues. You're going to feel miserable because it's all the concentrated bad news of the world all being downloaded into your consciousness within 15 minutes or a half hour. And what will that create? Such anxiety in the consciousness. But instead, if one hears heroic pastimes of the Mahabharata, the Ramayana, people with character, or hears about the activities of Krishna, then one's consciousness will begin to meditate upon that, and naturally one will become naturally, simply one will become Krishna conscious. And then in the morning, when the consciousness is somewhat soft and flexible, to fill one's consciousness with the beautiful forms of Sisi Gonitai, the Balavas, the Balavas, the Subhata. Look at them. Look at how beautiful they look. And how one, because it's so auspicious, spiritually auspicious, to have one's consciousness filled with their forms, we carry that with us during the day, and our consciousness, thinking about them, also becomes spiritually auspicious and pure. Due to the extreme fear, the smaller insect was absorbed in the characteristics and activities of the large wasp and thus entered into the existence of the wasp. It's the loudest clock. Was it always that loud? Forever, yes? You are all becoming very awake. The more you hear the sound.
the more awake and happy you become. And if you meditate upon a clock, what will that be? I don't know, but I don't want to find out. Maybe if you have Krishna conscious enough, time, Krishna says, time I am. And that is the art of somehow, because we can't control in this day and age, we can't control what experiences come to us. We can't control that. Because we're living in a world which is not Krishna conscious, which is centered around economic development, basically, and bewildering people. Prabhupada once said that we are trying all day long. He was walking on the beach in Zulu, and he saw the people, all the different things that the people were doing as they were walking. They were playing volleyball, they were doing this, they were doing that. And all the advertisements. And he's saying, we are working so hard to get people to use their time properly, use their human lives properly. Tarapa dhruva martadam, because with human life, one can attain the most wonderful thing. Something temporary, through something temporary, one can attain something eternal. So we are trying so hard and working so hard to get people to use their lives properly, and they are working so hard to get people to waste time, to waste their lives. More ingenious ways invented day after day to get people to waste their time, fill up their time, fill up the spaces between when they get up in the morning and go to sleep at night, fill up the spaces with meaningless, frivolous, time-wasting activities. When human life is very rare. And I've seen this for myself, and our Mahatma can verify this, that life goes very, very fast. And before you know it, you're 40, and then 50, and then 60, and then 70. And it goes like this before you know it. And then, what does one really have for having used one's life? I've wasted my time in very creative ways, or I've accumulated something that will turn to clouds and sand. The cloud has no substance. And sand has no value. So therefore, we should be very careful what we meditate upon, especially since the world will be throwing at us and our experiences will be throwing at us in this world so many frivolous things continuously. Dangerous things. Because those frivolous things are not just frivolous, they're actually dangerous. So how to change? We can't change the world. But what we are being, the issue is, how are we going to deal with what we see? We have to hear sufficiently and learn how to see Krishna's mercy in Krishna and Krishna's energy and Krishna's and Krishna acting through everything that occurs and everything that we see. Otherwise, we're going to be meditating upon things that appear to be separate from Krishna. And our consciousness will become absorbed in that. And the result can be very, very dangerous. So due to such meditation, he actually took the body of a wasp in his next life. So the implication of this particular verse is that, just like yam yam vapi smram bhavam, that first our consciousness develops in a particular way. And then, because our consciousness is already developed in a particular way, then naturally in our next life we take a suitable birth based on our consciousness. It's just natural. We already obtain tiger-like existence in this body. And in our next life, therefore, we become a tiger. If we obtain godly existence in this life, we will go upward. If we obtain spiritual consciousness, actual spiritual Krishna consciousness, where we actually have a developed relationship with Krishna, and that relationship is based on actual love for Krishna, then naturally we will go back home, back to Godhead. Sometimes I think, I wonder, why doesn't Krishna make it easy, or more easy, to develop love for Him? It's such a struggle, it's such a... Why doesn't He just like everyone go home, back to Godhead, and just make it really easy? We're trying hard and struggling. Why doesn't He just... But we can't go with this consciousness. And on the other hand, if we have the consciousness, Krishna consciousness, Vrindavan consciousness, then we will automatically be there. But the problem is we want, at least I'm getting myself, the problem is I want to go, but I want to take everything with me. All the consciousness. I mean, what to speak of the material part, you know, but I want to take this consciousness and be there. Because I'm attached to it, I identify with it. But it can't be. We have Krishna consciousness means a change of consciousness, but right down to the very core of who we are. To the very core of who we are. So therefore in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, in Kapila Muni's teachings, it describes how Bhakti Yoga, who remembers, what does it do to the subtle body, the mind, intelligence, and the soul? What does it do? What word is used? And it dissolves. What does that mean? It dissolves the subtle body. Yes, what does it mean though? It dissolves the subtle body. What does the subtle body consist of?
Mind,
intelligence, false ego, and polluted consciousness. What does it mean that they're dissolved?
That these two show its effect.
Excuse me?
That these two show their effects.
Okay. But why is this is described in Kapila Muni's teaching as different from any other practice of yoga? Because the karma is?
It's slowly dissolved.
But yes, this is true, but what's the very essence, the heart of the matter?
Dissolving means that the substance is dissolving, turning into the other thing.
But it still exists within the water. What it means is, yes.
It means that the removal matter is transformed into change.
But why? But what specifically about that? Of course, I'm thinking of something very specific and that makes it very difficult.
It means the clouds and the sun is shining on the clouds like the roll in the sky.
Yeah.
It's like it disintegrates and then disappears and stuff.
Yeah. But what specifically goes?
Even the desire seeds within the heart.
And where do the desire seeds within the heart rest? This is the point. This is what Bhakti Yoga does that no other yogic practice does. It gets to the heart of our material existence and attacks our material existence, transforms our material existence at its very root. And that's why, in one sense, it's very easy, and in the other sense, it's so difficult, because we're attacking the root of material existence, which is a sense of identity separate, as if we are separate from Krishna. Our sense of existence as if separate from Krishna and Krishna's service, and that means false ego. It attacks it immediately on the level of false ego. You are not your body. That's the main element of false ego, practically. This, who am I? This is me. This is me. Well, so many subtle parts of the false ego. But Krishna consciousness stops that. Who am I? Gopi Bharata Parakamalayo Dasa 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 Mahaprabhu Prophet. This is who I am. I am Krishna's. I am Krishna's servant. I am Krishna's, the servant of Krishna's servant, 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 servant. I am a servant of Krishna. That is who I am. A complete change of our sense of who we are. And that is why that's what has to be dissolved. What is dissolved by Bhakti Yoga is the sense of who we are. And it immediately, I am Krishna's, and Krishna is mine, as described in the second canto of chapter 9. I am Krishna's, and Krishna is mine. Krishna is mine. In Vaikuntha, and on the point of surrender, that sense of I am Krishna is very dominant. But in Vrindavan, what is dominant is Krishna is mine. He is ours, Mamata. He is our friend, village boy. When you have something, when you see the same things or people every day, there's such a tendency to take them for granted. And then when Krishna went to Mathura, and the people saw Krishna and his beauty, how beautiful he was, and how he walked like a baby elephant, very slowly and gracefully. He just walked. And the first thing he did when he got to Mathura, because he was coming from a village, so he wanted to be properly attired. So what's the first thing he did? He saw a washerman. Okay, could you give me those clothes, please? I need them. After all, Kamsa has served the kingdom from Krishna. So, and he sat, and Krishna spoke very, very sweetly to him, actually. Please, and we need these. And the washerman didn't even respond in a gentlemanly way. He could have said, no, you know, how can I do that? I'll get into so much trouble. These belong to King Kamsa. And if I give you the king's clothes, then what will happen to me? But instead he chastised Krishna and told, he said, you're so foolish, you go back to the village. You take the things that are meant for the king, and you're going to get into so much trouble, and the king's men are going to come and put you in jail. And he just chastised him, and immediately started, and Krishna had spoken very sweetly to him. And Krishna did not like his mood, because he had a demonic mood. And Krishna just went, cut his head off. And then he took all the clothes anyway. He took what he wanted. And not only that, he gave it to Balaram, the boys, and then he just left it, everything else. So then Krishna brought, next thing he did is he brought the clothes to a tailor. So he had them made very, very nice for him, so that he could be properly addressed as a city boy instead of like a village boy. And then, what happened next? Who did he see?
Kubja.
And Kubja, without going into the wonderful long pastime, Kubja decorated Krishna. Just like the pujaris do. Just decorated Krishna so carefully and beautifully. And Balaram and put chanda decorations all over his body. So he looks nicely dressed now in colorful kingly garments. And he was decorated with gopi chandan and different fragrances and scents. And then Who's the next person he saw? He got his garland. Yes, he got wonderful garlands, beautiful garlands, and he was looked just like Balava. Nicely decorated with a beautiful garland and his kingly attire. And he just walked through the streets. And everyone just simply looked at him. And everyone was thinking, what? We're seeing him for the first time. He's so beautiful. How unfortunate we are that this is the first time we've seen Krishna. Because there is nothing. The perfection of the use of the eyes is to see Krishna's form. That is what the eyes are used for. Otherwise, look how much trouble our eyes are going to get us into. Because through the eyes, so many objects and desires, because that's what advertising is trying to do. Through the eyes especially, trying to plant so many materialistic desires. What does advertising mean? It means to get you to buy something you don't need or want even. Through the eyes, planting so many desires in the heart. So that's not the perfection of the eyes. That's the materialistic exploitation of the eyes. But rather, sanvantam phalam, the fruit of having eyes, is to see the form of Krishna. So they were thinking, we're so fortunate now, and we're so unfortunate, because for so many days, we've lived with these eyes, and they have not yet seen Krishna. And then they thought of the fortune of the residents of Vrindavan, especially the Braja Gopis, because every single day, because they were living in the same village as Krishna, and every single day they would see Krishna. They would see Krishna. Their eyes would have a feast, and their consciousness would be fully absorbed in Krishna. Krishna consciousness in such a loving mood. Thinking we've seen Krishna today. When he's going out with the cowherd boys, and he was dressed in such a wonderful way, wearing, what would Krishna wear? That were brilliant, effulgent, enlightening in color. And he would wear a turban, and he would wear. What else would he wear around his neck? Not a garland yet, but what else would he wear? He would wear. But what else would he wear? A necklace of pearls. A necklace of pearls. And his mother and his servants, when Krishna was a certain age, his mother would dress him with such devotion. And then when Krishna turned 5 years old, he wouldn't let his mother dress him anymore. It's natural, even for God. And then the boys would take off all the ornaments when they were young that their mothers would give them, and then they would dress themselves with the flowers of the Vrindavan forest. They preferred the simple flowers and minerals offered by the Vrindavan forest to the costly jewels that they were decorated with. This is Braja. So the Mathuravasis, they would think how fortunate the Brajavasis were, the Vrindavanvasis. because they had seen Krishna every day. He was our village boy. Every day, like classmate, seen every day. And their consciousness would become full, full always of Krishna. And therefore, because their consciousness was always full of Krishna, they were always in Vrindavan. And if our consciousness becomes full of Krishna in the mood, in a proper devotional mood, not like Kamsa, his consciousness was always full of Vrindavan with fear, fearing that Krishna would kill him, because he had heard that Krishna was going to kill him at the time of the birth, time that went of the marriage of the good ring. Should be the rest of the purport. Similarly, although we are conditioned souls, if we absorb our consciousness in Lord Krishna, we can become liberated even before giving up our present body. If our intelligence becomes steady on the spiritual platform by understanding that Lord Krishna is everything, then we can give up unnecessary consciousness of the external body and absorb ourselves in the spiritual pastimes of Vaikuntha. Thus, even before death, one can raise oneself to the spiritual platform and enjoy life as a liberated soul. Or, if one is a stubborn fool, then even in this life, one can become just like an animal, such as a hog or a dog constantly thinking of eating and sex life. But human life is actually meant for understanding the science of consciousness and the future results of our meditation. Okay. Any questions or comments? How can we become fully absorbed in the thoughts of Krishna? How can we learn the art of not falling into material consciousness, but becoming elevated in spiritual consciousness? That question is the object of meditation and the object of our relating to all the devotees. How can I do this? And the object of prayer. We try to solve this greatest problem of material existence, of material consciousness. How can I convert my material consciousness to Krishna consciousness? Chant Hare Krishna in a special way. We look at the deities in a special way. We serve Krishna in a separate way. We don't keep any part of our life separate from Krishna. How to do that? How can we make our entire life Krishna conscious and not keep any part of our life as a separate compartment, separate from our devotional life? How can we incorporate all our life into our devotional life? Otherwise, we'll be living in... It's dangerous, because spiritual life wants 100% and material life demands 100%, so it's living on the edge. So we want to bring everything into alignment, our whole existence into alignment with our deepest spiritual desires. It's the goal of our life. So how to do this? Yeah. Oh yes, I'm glad you were going to tell me.
I'm going to ask you. You mentioned about seeing somebody every day when it becomes familiar. So in devotional life, when you have prayers to pray every day, when you do the darshan every day, and so how can one who's not on that very high level avoid sort of starting to think, well, I've been doing this for a few years now, I must have already kind of, you know, done enough, or become just a kind of a little bit of 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 a kind of
Good question. How can we stop from things becoming routine and mechanical and keep conscious of what we're doing and supposed to do? We hear. Hearing is very important because it's supposed to keep our consciousness awake. Hearing about what we're doing, Krishna consciousness, what we're doing, what the purpose of what we're doing is. And especially when we're in the temple room and performing the Sarup Siddha aspects of bhakti, the aspects of bhakti that Krishna is the same as, such as chanting his holy name, that the things of bhakti that are potent in and of themselves. Like driving a car isn't potent in and of itself, but driving a car for Krishna is a type of bhakti. But there are items of devotional service that have potency in and of themselves, sarup, by their sarup, their own sarup. Such as chanting and hearing and worship of the deities. So when we're especially doing those things, when we walk into the temple room, for example, we should be very conscious, keep very mindful of what it is we're doing. Because there is such a tendency. Okay, everyone, close your eyes. Don't look at the deities. Only see them in your mind. What color clothes are they wearing?
Yellow
and blue.
And what else? What color is the flower on?
White and pink.
You peeked. Some of us had to peek again. Now look. Look at Lord Raghunath and Baladev and Subhadra. Look at the crowns they're wearing. Look how colorful they are. It's a continuous festival. Life in the spiritual realm is a continuous smile, and everyone is wide open eyes in ecstasy. Look at their crowns. Look at their garments. The first challenge is to bring our consciousness to where our senses are when you're in the temple room. That's the first simplest challenge. So it's easy to see them as personalities. The first, put your consciousness, that's the first step to see them as they are. The mindfulness of what am I doing right now? I'm looking at the deity, so therefore my consciousness and mind shouldn't be out the door and all the things I have to do and have been doing. And because they're so beautiful, that helps put our consciousness where they are. It helps attract our consciousness to what our eyes are doing. So if we can look at them in a meaningful way, or chant in a meditative, conscious way, then our consciousness throughout the day can find shelter in what we've done with concentration in the morning and in the evening. And if we don't have a concentrated, mindful spiritual experience in the morning, when the modes of material nature shift into the mode of passion and everything, it's 100 times more difficult to do. To keep, and it's not just an innocent thing in the sense of without any repercussions. It means there are heavy repercussions, because if I I get too much into my IT work, I may become a virus in my next life.
Swine flu.
Huh?
Swine flu.
Yeah, we have to do those things, and this is the real challenge. How to live in that, how to live only in the spiritual world wherever we are. And this is the challenge of life. And obviously it's not easy. So when we come before the deities and we find our mind is everywhere, then we become humble, and then we become prayerful, and then we become more conscious. And things like that. So when we go in the door, come in the door of the temple, that's why it's good that it has a door. So because we're entering from one realm into another realm. So we should, when we open the door or walk through the gate, we should be reminded that this, when I'm in here, this is different. It shouldn't be different in one sense, but it is different, and it's going to take more of an effort on my part to have my consciousness doing what I'm doing, what my body is doing, my mind is doing. We should practice that. And then we'll have a deeper experience in the temple, and then that deeper experience we can take with us more. As during the day, we'll have that to rest upon, so to speak.
You're saying that if I find something difficult or sort of bad habit, or I have a problem, that is something that can be sort of used to help.
Can be. Well, that's. We have to be very. We have to learn how to turn whatever is material into something spiritual somehow or another. So even a problem can be turned spiritual through humility and taking shelter. Okay, it's after 9, so we should stop now. But before we leave, we should deeply bring our consciousness to the wonderful form of Sisi Gauranga Thai, Sisi Radhanapali, Sisi Radhanapali, Sisi Radhanapali. And the six Goswamis. And. Sisi Prabhupada Ki Jai, Srinivasa Swami Ki Jai. Nithai Gaura Gosha.